WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire,
and streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is facing a referendum on his leadership after Florida GOP Congressman Matt Gaetz moves to trigger a vote on whether McCarthy should remain Speaker. It comes after Speaker McCarthy turned to Democrats to push through a 45-day spending bill that does not include more aid for Ukraine. More on that from CBS's Scott McFarlane, who spoke to Representative Abigail Spanberger, a Democrat from Virginia.
President Biden is urging Congress to restore aid for Ukraine.
Too many lives are at stake, too many children, too many people.
Which was cut this weekend to appease some conservative Republicans who think taxpayers have spent enough.
Is there any risk in waiting to provide that aid?
Certainly on the battlefield, but more importantly, the risk comes in what our partner nations are saying.
The Republicans seeking to oust McCarthy accuse him of cutting a secret side deal with the White House guaranteeing Ukraine funding. McCarthy denied it. The president, despite referencing it, didn't address shouted questions from reporters about it.
Just in, the Central Kansas police chief who led a raid on a small weekly newspaper has resigned. That confirmation coming from a Marion, Kansas City Council member. Donald Trump appears in a New York City courtroom for the start of a civil trial to determine damages. Fraud case against him for, a justice says, overstating the value of his assets to illegally obtain financing and more. Trump says outside of the courtroom,
"This is a horrible situation for our country. It's never happened before. It's election interference. They're interfering with the presidential election of 2024.
On the first day of the new term, the Supreme Court denies attorney John Eastman's petition involving emails sought by the January 6th House Select Committee. CBS News legal analyst Thane Rosenbaum says Justice Clarence Thomas recused himself from the appeal.
The level of intimacy involved in having Justice Thomas weigh in when his former law clerk stands before the court as a defendant would cross too many ethical lines.
California Governor Gavin Newsom names LaFonza Butler to fill the seat of late Senator Dianne Feinstein. Butler is a Democratic strategist and leads Emily's List, a political organization supporting women who favor abortion rights. Newsom saying of his choice,
I wasn't kidding when I said I remember being grilled by LaFonza on my vision for long-term care, and it changed me a little bit. I said, I got to step up my game.
Meantime, Senator Feinstein will lie in state on Wednesday, and her funeral service on Thursday has been moved to the San Francisco City Hall steps and is open to the public. SAG-AFTRA and the AMPTP say they'll resume negotiations on Wednesday. That word comes after the first full day of talks in months since Hollywood actors went on strike on July 14th. This is CBS News.
If you need to hire, you need Indeed, because Indeed's all-in-one hiring solution helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly. Law enforcement authorities have issued a green alert for a 51-year-old veteran who may have taken his parents' vehicle. Authorities are looking for Shane Helmbrecht, who is court-ordered to reside at a group home in Tomo, Wisconsin, due to a 2016 Eau Claire County homicide case in which he was found not guilty by reason of insanity. Helmbrecht is reportedly allowed to come and go from the home as he pleases, but did not advise staff that he was leaving. He's reportedly driving a 2003 green Toyota Avalon with a license plate number of 487-FFN. Wisconsin cybersecurity will improve thanks to a collaboration between the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater and the Wisconsin Department of Military Affairs Division of Wisconsin Emergency Management. According to a WEAU report, the university and WEM will work to improve the state's cyber response team training program. The cyber response team is a voluntary group of members and cyber incident responders. For Civic Media News, I'm James Kelly.
Why are interscholastic sports called the last classroom of the day? Because they teach students important life lessons like teamwork, accountability, and perseverance. School sports are so much more than a game. They're about developing the whole person. That's why they're an essential part of every student's education.
Encourage your student to participate in the last classroom of the day. Interscholastic sports in Wisconsin. This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
over and over and over and over and over, then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
People won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, could potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
93.5, The Tap. It's what's on tap for the Chippewa Valley. 93.5, The Tap.
Are you tired of think tank approved corporate news and commentary? Are you tired of CEOs telling you what to think, who to hate, and who to vote for? Well, welcome to the Rick Smith Show. We don't take orders from some boardroom, and we don't do focus groups or talking points. We don't work for them, and we never will. I'm Rick Smith, and I work for you. Join us daily at thericksmithshow.com and download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So last weekend, we talked about the fact that we went to Toledo, up to Centerline, Michigan, then over to Wayne, Michigan to hit the picket lines. And we're going to be back here at the end of October visiting Toledo, one of our attempts to do more with the folks who are on strike. I'm hoping they'll be done by then, hoping the contract will be reached, hoping they'll be back to work. But in the event that they're not, we're going to head out to Toledo for an event with our affiliate out there to promote the fact that workers are on strike fighting for better wages, hours, conditions for their future. Also going to do an event with the Dropkick Murphys. We'll have Ken Casey on the program to talk about this strike and all the things going on. So that's something to look forward to. Now, there's, you know, when we were there, when we were in Toledo, there was a huge Jeep procession. There were like 70 Jeeps that were just circling the plant. And you know, I have my Jeep Wrangler, and for a little bit we joined in, and I love the fact that people are taking not just to the picket line but taking to the streets to show the pride in their work. And one of those folks who is doing the solidarity rides, her name is Jessie Kelly. She's a UAW local 160 worker. She's also the chair of communications, has a podcast, Unity Gains podcast, which I highly suggest to take a look at. Jesse, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you so much for having us on.
So tell me about these solidarity rides. How'd you get this started?
So the idea behind the solidarity rides really came from the fact that when you're out on a picket line and there's like so much time that passes, I was out on a picket line for 40 days 4 years ago, it starts to become a little mundane, and you know, you try to keep the solidarity live as much as possible, but the cars driving by and the community support and the honks really get you through hour from hour and hour on the picket line. And so when we started the stand-up strike and we found out that the first two plants were going to be the Jeep plant and the Bronco plant for Chrysler and for Ford, we said, how adorable is this, that they're competitors, but we're going out together and we're going out in solidarity and we're fighting for the same thing. Although we are different units and different companies, we're all UAW. So the idea came from, what if we send a bunch of Jeeps out to the Bronco plant to say, we're with you. And what if we send a bunch of Broncos out to the Jeep plant, and just by driving by, they get a little signal to say, hey, we're with you and we're in this together. And this is a class struggle and we're going to win this as one unit, as the UAW, not as Ford and not as Stellantis, but as UAW. And I think it's really lifted a bunch of spirits.
No, and it's amazing messaging, because it's that you're showing this solidarity. I don't care what you do. We're all important, and this all should matter to everyone. Even if you don't work for a UAW company, even if you work just in town, the fact that these jobs are good paying jobs, the fact that they're stable in the community and that they're providing, you know, a stable basis for an economy is really important. So the messaging out of this is huge, I think, too.
I completely agree. And for me, I always say it's all about opportunity, and it's about opportunity not only for our generation, but every generation after us. And that's what we're fighting for. And so to see that solidarity really play out is just absolutely gorgeous.
Because, you know, I think about the old Jay Gould quote, or it's attributed to Jay Gould, "I can pay half the working class to murder the other half." This could be a dividing line. You know, you work for Ford, they work for GM, they work for Stellantis or whatever. This is kind of a message to the boss going, hey, we're not going to be divided on these lines. We are right. we're going to stand together regardless of where you're at. That is, to me, just incredible messaging.
Yeah, I completely agree.
So what kind of response did you get from the people in either place? Because, you know, when we took our Jeep, because I have a Jeep Wrangler, I looked at the Bronco, ended up with the Jeep. Because, well, quite frankly, it's just because the Jeep had a stick shift, and I prefer manual. But, you know, when we went to both places, I got compliments from both lines. So, again, I think your messaging helped me out a little bit.
Yeah, and it is absolutely incredible. I remember I was at the Jeep line their second day of strike, and I was talking about how obsessed I am with the Broncos. And even then, you know, they're like, yep, as long as it's UAW built, as long as it's built by our brothers and sisters, that's all that matters. And I think that's, you know, it's just amazing, because for so many decades, we watch these corporations whipsaw us against each other and make us believe that we're competitors with each other when we're not. And so it's just been amazing. It's just so great. So last weekend I was on the Jeep line, and I was out there. It was about 2 o'clock in the morning. I was trying to help hold down the line for the midnight shift. You know, it gets a little sparse out there at midnight shift when it starts getting cold and stuff. And I remember, like, I had been out there for about 10 hours at that point, and I'm by a burn barrel. I'm talking to some brothers and sisters, and all of a sudden 10 Jeeps pull up and they go, hey, we're going on a convoy, and we're going to go visit our brothers and sisters at the fleet location, which is about 15 minutes away from the Jeep plant, who are also out on strike. And, you know, you just jump in the Jeep, you go down the street, you drive for about 15 minutes, you go see the other people that are out on strike, you lift their spirits, you get them some grilled cheeses, some water, and then you get back in there and go back to your picket line. And it really does just motivate you to keep going and keep going and keep going. And on Friday, we did one at the Solidarity House. And the idea was that we knew all of the negotiations were now happening at the Solidarity House. So we wanted to show the companies that we buy the products that we make when you pay us enough money to buy the products that we make.
Isn't that the famous Ford line? Isn't that the famous story we hear about, you know, about Henry Ford paying his people enough that they could buy the stuff that they make?
Right. And we wanted to show them that, like, we are loyal to these corporations. And yes, we're striking you right now because we want the kind of lifestyle that allows us to buy the products that we make. And that's not true for everybody. That is true for some of the people that are at the plants, the people that were hired before 2007 that still get a pension and health insurance and are top tier or legacy workers. But that's not true for our temporary workers and our two tier workers and all the people that we're fighting for right now. So we wanted to remind them while you're in negotiations, we're also your customer base. We're your workers and we're your employees, but we're your customer base too. And we're loyal to you. So we expect the same reciprocated loyalty back.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Jesse Kelly. She's a UAW Local 160 worker, also a host of the podcast Unity Gains. Wherever you get your favorite podcasts, I'm sure you'll find Unity Gains. Make sure you check that out. Now you talk about the negotiations going on. Are we hearing things that things are moving? Where are we right now?
Yeah, so we're hearing things are moving. I'm a GM employee, so I just heard from the news today that the UAW offered another proposal to General Motors. General Motors came out in a statement, said there's still significant gaps. So they're moving, but they seem to be moving slowly. I love the messaging that is coming from our new international president, Sean Fain, because he's absolutely correct. These companies put themselves on strike. We were very upfront. We were very open and very transparent with what we were expecting out of this round of negotiations from the very beginning, 6 weeks prior to the deadline. And they stalled out and they stalled out and they were unwilling to waver or talk or put any effort or energy into it. And then all of a sudden a strike is called and they want to act shocked. And they're like, I can't believe that this is happening. And it's like, you had every opportunity prior to this to stop the strike. So it is important to know that, you know, they put us out on strike. We didn't put us out on strike. They forced our hand. Yeah. Nobody wants to be out on a strike, but that's where we're at. And we're going to do what we have to do until we get what we finally deserve.
Now, as a lot of the people that we spoke to on the picket lines talked about, this strike really is about the fact that the companies haven't honored their word from, correct, you know, the concessions that were given, you know, back in 2008, that, you know, 7 and 8, that, you know, they just want what they were expecting. What they were promised, what they were told, and that, you know, a 40% raise, while it sounds eye-popping, is really not that big once you consider it's over multiple years and the fact that you gave up so much from the start. I don't know that that's been, especially in our corporate-controlled mainstream media, I don't know that that's been fleshed out enough.
I completely agree. And one of the biggest things to remember, too, is we did take so many concessions in 2007 and 2008 to save those corporations, under the understanding that when things got good again, when it was time to reap in the benefits of all of those sacrifices, that we would be invited to the table. And we weren't, we were shunned. And we have not gotten anything back for all of those sacrifices that we created. If anything, it's only gotten worse. So we've taken more concessions in that time. In the last 4 years, even after a 40-day strike as a GM employee in 2019, we only achieved 6% gross wage increases over those 4 years. And so that means with inflation, we took roughly like a 12, 13% cut to our standard of living. I'm doing worse today than I was in 2019. And that shouldn't be the trajectory that we're on when we're working for corporations that are making multi-billion dollars and, you know, record-breaking profits every single year.
What's interesting to me is I hear this, and I've gotten this from a lot of listeners who have said, well, you know, these companies are doing well. Now, what happens, you know, if they do poorly? They're going to give away the store and they can't help themselves. And I said, you know what they'll do if they start doing poorly? They'll do what they've done in the past. They'll come back to the workers and ask for concessions. So when times are good, demand what you earn, what your labor creates, you should get a part of. Because, you know, if things start to turn south, they're coming back with their hat in hand, begging for concessions. You know that's going to happen.
Absolutely. And we want to work for profitable companies. We just want our fair share of that. That's all it is.
No, I say this all the time. Look, every company I've ever worked for, I want them to be as profitable as they can off of my labor. For the sole reason of that, you know, come negotiation time, I can come back and ask for better wages, hours, conditions. That seems to be the virtuous cycle. You do better, I do better. We both do better. And we do better when we both do better.
I mean, that's exactly right. And right now, all that we're seeing, though, is record-breaking profits, and they're doing fantastic while we keep doing worse and worse and worse. And this gap and this divide is just growing so astronomically that we're in a situation where there's not going to be a middle class left unless we fight for it right now. And so we have to. And when we say, like, this is our defining moment, it is our defining moment, and not just for the UAW, for the whole entire middle class.
Well, I mean, you're on the front lines also of the tech war. I don't think that's been covered enough either. You know, you're going, look, we want the next generation of jobs that are coming. And we're at another one of those transition points in our history. You know, I'm sure the people who made, you know, buggies, horse and buggies, built the best horse and buggies. But when the car came along, they were all out of work and they got screwed. And as I've said a number of times on this show, every technological gain that has happened, the wealthy get wealthier and the working class gets poorer and abused. This can be a time where that doesn't happen. And it's because of the labor unions that maybe it won't. I look at the Writers Guild. I look at the Screen Actors. I look at what you guys are doing. This transition can happen, but it's got to happen in a way where workers don't take it on the chin.
I mean, that's right. We need a just transition. We need, as a society, to make sure that everybody benefits from technology and from advancements that we make as a society as a whole. And like you said, we've been so disproportionate in that. And the wealthy has been the only ones that have been able to take advantage of all of these technological growths. And that's super unfortunate and it's not fair. And if we keep going down that path, again, that gap will just keep getting wider and wider. So we have to make sure that we fight for these things. We have to make sure we have a just transition. And it's not just technology. It's the transition into EV for us. And then that is coupled with technology, too. I know that I work for, like, you know, the tech center. So we do a lot of the pre-prototype vehicles, which means that a lot of the vehicles that I build are going into crash testing. Well, now you can have virtualized crash testing, or now you can make a pre-prototype vehicle while you're wearing goggles and doing it with AI, and you're doing it virtually and simulators and stuff. So we have to make sure that we are equally benefiting from all of these advancements. And that's why something like the 32-hour work week should not be scary to people, and it should be embraced by everybody, because that is, as a society, how we make sure that we get a piece of that pie. We want to make sure that everybody's gainfully employed, and we don't want to see jobs getting lost because we as a society are doing the right thing by going green.
No, you're spot on. I mean, the 1880s, 1870s, 1880s, it was 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, 8 hours for what you will. Technology has given us the opportunity to possibly get down to a 6 hour work day, get us down to some place where, you know, maybe we have more family life, maybe more leisure, maybe more, I don't know, anything but work.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, even if that means that you're contributing in a way to society that makes you feel more fulfilled, I mean, that's a beautiful thing for everybody.
So last line of question that I've got for you, because, you know, ultimately, this comes down to, you know, how long can the members hold out? You know, always the frame, one day longer, one day stronger. How are people holding up? I mean, we're, what, you know, 13, 14 days into this? The first paychecks are going to be starting to get missed. People are going to start, you know, the wallets are going to start getting tight. How are people holding up?
People are holding up okay. I mean, strikes are hard on everybody, but solidarity always prevails. At the end of the day, we will make sure that our brothers and sisters have everything that they need to make it as long as they need to. So the community support, the support from the other UAW brothers and sisters is amazing. And I go and I donate every single time I walk a line. I know my brothers and sisters do. I've went to their pantries. They have more than enough to sustain everything that somebody may need. So they're going to be fine. And I honestly think that they can hold out way longer than the companies believe that they can. And we're going to hold out until we win this for everybody.
One day longer, one day stronger. Jesse Kelly, mm-hmm. I appreciate you taking time for us. I hope you'll come back and share more as this continues.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Make sure you check out Jesse's podcast, Unity Gains. We'll get links out on social media, how you can take a look at that, and maybe send some feedback. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around and listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You know, I don't think enough has been made of Trump going to Michigan. I just don't. Holding that sham of a rally, trying to, you know, it was really a fraud. I mean, for someone now found guilty of fraud, he held a fraudulent auto worker rally at a non-union facility where the owner of this non-union facility is holding his child who's holding a UAW sign. I mean, it's fraudulent. It just is what it is. I know it's political theater. I know that they're trying to, you know, it's politics, and, you know, lying, I guess, is part of the scheme. But I don't think enough has been made of the fact that Trump's record is really bad. I mean, his record on labor issues are horrible. This was a guy who gave the Chamber of Commerce everything they wanted for Christmas. You know, when you were a kid, did you get everything you wanted on your list? If your parents said, put down your top 10 toys, anything you want for Christmas, anything you can imagine, a pony, a puppy, all of it, a Lamborghini, Bo Derek or Farrah Fawcett, whatever. When you were a kid, did you ever get everything on your list? No, you may have gotten one thing, maybe two if you were lucky. The Chamber of Commerce, they put out their wet dream list and they got all of them. And it's one of those things that everything that corporate America could have wanted, they got out of Trump. And the pendulum swung just a bit further on the side of the employer class. We seem to forget that during his tenure, the No Rights at Work agenda got that much worse for working people. A Supreme Court that decided we're a right-to-work country for public sector workers, which really just means we're gutting the union's ability to protect and to defend and to advocate for working people. Because that's what right-to-work is all about. It's about giving away laborers their services, their protection, their work, their attorney fees, all of the things that go into representing people, giving away their representation for free. Because it's a right to freeload. But he went so much further than that. Ending the joint employer rule, giving management the ability to change, contract rules unilaterally, during the process of bargaining. There was so much that happened. One of the things that, I go back and I think about, because I had been a union steward for a number of years. And look, when you're a union steward, you're advocating on behalf of someone else. You're basically their mouthpiece, because the employer doesn't want to deal with each individual worker. They're going to deal with the one person who represents the grievance, and you're going to argue over those. And I had gotten into a number of very heated arguments with terminal managers over the years. So much so that, I've said things that I later wish I hadn't. I don't regret it. I wish I maybe had been a little more articulate. Let's put it that way. But after all, being a truck driver, there's certain language the FCC would be very unhappy with if I were to use here. But I, in the past, have used some colorful language in representing people. And that was perfectly fine because in those days, a union representative and the company representative were on equal footing in those meetings. Because your job was to deal with this problem. And that worked. So if something colorful popped out, well, that happened. And you moved on because they did it too. Well, one of the things that happened during the Trump years, and again, this is something that the Chamber of Commerce wanted. They wanted to quash that equality in those rooms. They wanted to make sure you still knew who was boss. And they allowed people to be fired or disciplined for using offensive language or profane language, whatever that means, because oh golly gosh darn could be offensive to some. And understand, it's protected NLRA activity, or it was, because understand what the Trump folks, what the Republicans want is working people to know their place. And I go back to that CEO Tim Gurney, who was very clear. He was very articulate in his statement that he wanted higher unemployment, he needed pain and suffering in the economy so that workers would know their place, that they wouldn't think that they're special and that the employer class needed them. He wanted people to know that those workers better know they need the boss and they better darn well be grateful. This is where Republicans have been. So anything you can do to quash people's ability to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, or profits, let's say that way. Because better wages for workers means lower profits for the shareholders, for the bosses, for the CEO. That's the reality. And they know this. And the reason they don't want union workers is because, well, it cuts into the bottom line. You got to follow pesky rules. You've got to, have safe working conditions. You got to pay minimum wage. You can't cheat people out of wages because the union's going to be there to fight for it. I said this before. I've been working my entire life, over 30 years in the trucking industry. I've never been cheated out of a dime. They've tried a couple of times, but I've filed a grievance and gotten my money. I can't say that about every working person. And in the Trump era, you know, since I brought up wage theft, the person he put in charge of the wage theft division of at the Department of Labor, actually someone who was committing wage theft. Yeah, that, nothing more Trumpian than that. So for me, we're kind of in a moment. Do we go back to the Chamber of Commerce want and need? Or do we continue on what Biden's been doing and his NLRB, which is restoring some rights for workers to be able to get better wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, a voice, a say? I don't think it's that tough of a choice. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at therickSmithshow.com. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1935. That was the year that San Diego hosted the California Pacific International Exposition, where President Franklin Delano Roosevelt spoke the most memorable words about the rights of workers to organize. The goal of the exposition was to showcase San Diego and to boost the local economy, which had fallen on hard times during the Great Depression. The exposition was held in Balboa Park. Exhibits included history, science, industry, and culture. To prepare for the expo, improvements were made to the park paid for by the Works Progress Administration. The WPA was a New Deal-era program designed to put people back to work on public infrastructure projects. The expo kicked off in May and ran for 377 days with a break during the winter months. More than 7 million people visited the park for the expo. Two of those visitors was President Roosevelt and his wife Eleanor. As part of his trip, the president gave a speech to 60,000 people at Balboa Stadium. Earlier that year, the president had signed the Wagner Act, otherwise known as the National Labor Relations Act, which guaranteed private sector workers the right to join and form a union. The president spent part of his expo speech celebrating that achievement. He declared, quote, "A changing civilization has raised new problems with respect to the relationship between the employer and the employed. It is now beyond partisan controversy that it is a fundamental individual right of a worker to associate himself with other workers and to bargain collectively with his employer." President Roosevelt went on to acknowledge, quote, "New laws in themselves do not bring a millennium. The passage of the law helped to launch a new wave of union organizing across U.S. industry."
In the mid-1800s, a new political party flared up in America, posing as an alternative to both the Democratic and Republican parties. Xenophobic and nativist, it was extremely secretive about its specific structure, motive, and agenda. Indeed, members were instructed to say, "I know nothing," when asked about details. Thus, it was quickly dubbed the Know Nothing Party. In 1856, it nominated Millard Fillmore as its presidential nominee, but he was reticent to talk about the party and even unwilling to proclaim that he was a member. He lost, and the Know-Nothing soon withered. But now, here comes another alternative party with secretive motives and backers. Labeling themselves No Labels, this group ought to be named the Nothing Party, for it offers nothing of substance to voters. Its so-called common-sense agenda is fluffier than cotton candy, yet it's trying to run a third-party candidate in next year's presidential race. Why? Follow the money. That's not easy to do, though, for this gaggle of conservative corporatists slyly incorporated as a nonprofit social welfare outfit, a deceit that lets it hide the names of its political funders from the public. The New Republic, however, got records revealing that No Labels is a fat cat front, with Texas billionaire Republican Harlan Crow leading the way. Who? Crow is the political patron who has secretly been lavishing luxury gifts and cash on Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who in turn has embraced Crow's plutocratic positions in court cases. This is Jim Hightower saying that same plutocratic agenda appears to be fueling No Label's third-party presidential push. For these rich politicos know that a milquetoast spoiler candidate would most likely draw independent moderates from Joe Biden, giving Crow and company another GOP corporate presidency. It's a cynical game, but that's how they play it.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, we talk about all the time how unions fight to make wages, hours, conditions better, life better. As I've said a million times, union job, better life. Learned that as a small child growing up in the projects. And like I said, yes, unions fight for better wages, hours, conditions, but also they do so much more in the community, so much more for workers and their families. And one of those things, my union, the Teamsters Union, they have a scholarship fund, and there are a bunch of this stuff to help people get better opportunities. And that's why I've asked Jim Hoffa to come talk with us, former Teamster president. He is now, this is amazing to me. They're giving out, I think it was $1.2 million in scholarship money over the past, you know, several years. You're looking at something like $6.4 million in the James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. That's why I've asked former President Jim Hoffa to come talk with us. Jim, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, Rick, good to be here. And good to talk about something I really believe in, the James R. Hoffa Scholarship Fund. Like you said, what's the biggest issue people are talking about? A scholarship fund, we're talking about going to college, the cost of going to college, that people want to go to college, they can't afford it. And we're making it better for Teamsters' sons and daughters because we have a scholarship fund that's been in existence for 23 years. We've given out millions of dollars to thousands and thousands of Teamster kids. And this year, we're awarding $1.2 million, 93 $10,000 scholarships, 32 $1,000 scholarships, what are called bootstraps. And these are going to help kids go to school, go to college, and most of all, also vocational training. So if they want to go to truck driving school, they want to be a nurse, they want to be an aviation mechanic, we're going to make that possible. So, I mean, and we're just not making it just for college, we're making it for everybody. I think that's important. Yeah. So people can get out, and we want everybody to have the opportunity. You know, the Teamsters are airline pilots and zookeepers. I mean, we cover everything, and we want everybody to have the opportunity. And we have had thousands of applications, and we have an organization that goes through and takes the people that are have the best grades and stuff like that that are going to succeed either in whether they're vocational or their college scholarship. So, and we've had a great alumni. You know, when we used to have all of our dinners and everything else, we would have these kids come that won. And it's amazing the stories they would tell about how I wouldn't be able to go to college. And one is a microbiologist. She's a brilliant woman in Seattle, Washington. How she would tell the story about how what the Teamsters made it so she could go to college. Another kid is in Canada. He's going to become a labor lawyer, a labor union lawyer up in Canada because she went to law school and got the money from the Teamster Scholarship Fund. We've got another guy that actually goes to he's a congressman. Brendan Bayer from Pennsylvania. Can you believe that? I don't know if you know him or not.
Yeah.
He has a scholarship, and he will come and testify and say, boy, without that, I couldn't have made it. So, you know, we've got a great alumni group, and it's important for us. You know, in my family, my dad had to drop out of school in the eighth grade. His dad died at a very young age. And the whole family back then, the whole family had to go to work. Everybody had to make money, take in washing, whatever you can do. So the whole family had to stop going to school at the eighth grade to make money for they could survive. And so I think that's where we get the idea of how important scholarships are. My sister and I are the first people in our family, either side of our family, to go to college. So you know, we believe in it, and I think everybody believes that, you know, we want to do better than our fathers. We want to have a good career. We want to have a good life, and we deserve it here in America.
No, absolutely. And this is, you know, I hear this story over and over again. You know, I'm working hard. I'm doing the truck driving job or the zookeeper job so that my kids will have better opportunities. And this is just another one of those things that our union does to help us get an opportunity at a better life. And I'm thrilled by it. And I hope people will check out the website, jrhmsf.org. We'll get links out on social media. Stands for James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. Like I said, we'll get this out on social media. But this year, a big year. $1.2 million you guys are giving out to recipients. How is this funded?
We basically go out and talk to local unions. They help us. We have investments. We take the money. It's hard to put it together. I called thousands of people for want to make sure that they contribute. And we were very, very fortunate to have a lot of locals help us out, make contributions. It's really a work of art for all of us to work. And a lot of the locals will say, I want to give, because I got 5 scholarships last year, or I got 2 scholarships, or the year before that, I got a scholarship, because the locals are notified if somebody in their local gets the scholarship. So they realize there's something in it for them to make it better for their members. So they're enthusiastic about doing it. And we had a tremendous response here. So that's how we fund it. We have them come kick in, and we also invest our money and make sure it gets, you know, hopefully we do okay in the stock market or whatever we're doing, and to get enough money to put together this $1.2 million. We've been doing this for 23 years, and we intend to do it for a long time. So I want you to know we're in business, and we're going to keep it up and keep helping those kids.
Good on you and the work that you do on this, because it's so important. I know in retirement, this is your baby right now. This is your pet project. This is your passion. But you got to be doing something else as well.
Well, right? I'm working on. I'm part of the institute, the Roosevelt Institute at Hyde Park. I'm on the board of directors there, and we do a lot up there with regard to education. I'm putting out programs, putting out kind of a think tank, and meeting with people. This weekend, we honored Nancy Pelosi in Hyde Park with one of the awards. And we talked about the issues facing America. I mean, we're getting that message out. And it's a great think tank. And I'm also involved in charities here in Michigan. So I keep busy right now, and I'm looking forward to it. But I keep in contact with all my friends in the union. And that's really one of my second family.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be looking around and seeing, you know, all of the excitement, all of the militancy, all of the activity going on. And you got to be looking on this. It's some pride that you helped build some of this.
Absolutely. It's a great time for labor. Labor's excited right now. You know, whether it's the Teamsters with UPS, whether it's the auto workers right now and the battle that they have right now, the Screen Actors Guild. I understand the culinary is going to go out in Las Vegas. It's a time of militancy right now. And why is that happening? I've been thinking about that. Just think about what happened over the last 3-4 years. It's been unusual. It hasn't been regular times. We had the COVID. Remember that knocked us out for a year. But you know what? Working people had to go to work every day. They had to go to work every day. While other people, they said, oh, stay at home, shelter at home, all that stuff. Our people went to work. Our UPS drivers went to work. The auto workers went to work. You know, the bartenders had to go to work. And those are the people out there that are struggling right now. And then what happened? You had almost 8% inflation that came on, you know, right in 2021, 22. And people felt that in their pocket right now. So, you know, gas is high, groceries are high. Everybody's going backwards. And, you know, that belonged to a union. You get a raise, but it's never enough. It's never enough to get better. We want to get better, not stay where we're at. So that's the militancy that's going on right now. And you've got unique issues today. I mean, you really got issues that, you know, there are issues for the time right now. I think one of the issues right now with auto workers is this whole idea of electric cars. You know, they say they can build them with 1/3 less workers. What's going to happen to all the UAW members? They're going to lose their jobs.
Yeah.
So I think that they've got to find some way to negotiate with the big three, that whether they're going to be battery plants or whether there's going to be something that goes on, that they keep their membership up and these people still have the benefit of belonging to a strong union. And it's the same thing that's going on, you know, with regard to the Screen Actors Guild and the writers right now. The biggest issue there, you know, is artificial intelligence. You know, I had an example this weekend of how you can basically duplicate something, and I saw what they came up with. I got news where it was unbelievable that it was done by a machine.
Yeah.
So somebody demonstrated that to me because I had never seen it before. So it's a great danger to all of us. And of course, the culinary out in Las Vegas, you know, there's a lot of money out there, and they've got a struggle out there. We're very, very close to that union, and we give them all the support they can.
No, they're good folks. I got to get your thoughts on President Biden walking a picket line. Historic, first time a sitting president has ever walked a picket line. And I know Barack Obama said he was going to put on his comfortable shoes and he was going to get out there. Didn't mention Wisconsin, didn't show up. But President Biden walked the picket line. And, you know, it's one thing to talk the talk. It's a whole nother thing to walk the walk. And he did.
No, he did. You know, I don't know where people talk about that he's not doing a good job. And what he's been the best labor president we've ever had. We haven't had anybody him like since FDR. He's been tremendous for us. I mean, he did the Recovery Act. He's done so many things to bring jobs to America. He's created 13 million jobs. Anybody wants to get a job, everybody knows you can get one right now. There's signs everywhere. You can just pick the job you want, and they're good jobs. So I don't know where people are saying that he's not doing a good job. And the fact that he came here, I think, really made history. And I think it shows where his heart is, because he's that kind of a guy. I've known him for a number of years. He believes in the, you know, the other people. You know, you go back to Clinton, you go back to Obama. They were good presidents, but they, I don't think they really bought into the fact of the labor movement. And Joe does believe in that.
So I got on the other side, the flip side of this, you know, because on Tuesday you had Biden walking the picket line. On Wednesday, Donald Trump went to a non-union facility, surrounded himself with actors and paid grifters to hold up signs and pretend to be union members and workers. Any thoughts on the juxtaposition between the two of them?
Oh, I don't think he did himself any good here. I mean, the same crazy show up for him. If he shows up in Macomb County, which is the east side of Detroit, he could always draw several thousand people. And they weren't union people going there. They were just basically the people that vote for Trump. They're Trumpsters, you know. They show up anywhere, and they've got their drums and their, you know, the three-cornered hats and flags and everything else, but they're the same people that show up. I don't think he made himself any friends here. He certainly didn't get any support from the, he didn't incur anything with regard to the labor vote that's going to come out of Michigan for Biden.
At least I hope so. That's what my friends in Michigan keep telling me, that don't be afraid. But I'm always concerned.
Well, I'm always concerned too. I mean, you got to run scared all the time. You know that.
This is the truth. I want to go back real quick to the scholarship fund, because I want to make sure that we hammer this home, because I think it's so important for our Teamster members and my Teamster brothers and sisters to know that this is out there. This is available, the James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. Real simple. It's jrhmsf.org. We'll get links out on social media how you can take a look at this. This really is your passion, isn't it?
Yeah, let me just say the one more thing. We mail out all the applications and all the material to every local, and they're the ones that distribute that and talk to their members about making sure people sign up. So they're the ones that do that, and I think that's how this all gets happening. We had over 1,000 applications. We were very, very thrilled with that people are responding, because there's a tremendous need right now for people to go to school. They need help right now, and that's what we're doing right now. So it's been a big success. But we go to the locals, and the locals help us, you know, get the word out. You go to your local, they know about it, they've got the applications. You can get it online, like you just said. You can go online on James R. Hoffa Scholarship Memorial Scholarship Fund, James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. So if you do that, you can get the application. But the local unions are also getting the material. They have cardboard cutouts that they put out in the local, so people can say, sign up right now for this. It's important that we do this. And we get the support of our members, and it's important that we continue the support from the local unions too.
And I think it's also important, the legacy of your father. You know, personal story, my grandfather was a huge fan of your father, because, you know, when he started working back in the late 20s, he was making 17 cents an hour shoveling coal off the back of a coal truck for 16 hours a day. And by the time he was able to retire, after spending a number of most of his working life as a working Teamster, he retired with dignity, was able to live out his life in his home with dignity and respect. And he gave credit to your father and to the union for being able to give him that opportunity. And I think there are so many stories like that still out there, and so many people like me who remember them. That's why I think it's important to keep that legegacy alive.
Well, I was the same thing. You know, I was at the... I was at a meeting in Florida, and one of the members said, when I came to work here at UPS, it was a UPS driver. He had a great career. He was getting ready to retire. He says, I was making $8 an hour. When I retired, I'm making $42. He says, that's pretty damn good. And he said, that's the way it is. That's what the Teamsters Union delivers.
That's it. President Hoffa, I appreciate you taking some time for us. Great work. Keep this up. I'd love to have you come back and talk to us again as this continues to grow.
Rick, keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, Jim Hoffa. He is the chief cook and bottle washer there at the James R. Hoffa Memorial Scholarship Fund. Make sure you check out their website, jrhmsf.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at it. And hey, another reason to be joining the Teamsters Union. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. Did you enjoy a cup of coffee to start your day this morning? Well, on this day in labor history, the year was 2007. That was the day that Starbucks agreed to post information about union rights on an employee bulletin board at its store in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The International Workers of the World, or Wobblies, were attempting to organize the baristas at that store. The IWW accused Starbucks of interfering with the right to form a union. Starbucks management consistently points to better than average benefits provided for their employees as a reason against unionization. Starbucks management decided to settle the Grand Rapids dispute by letting the union information to go up before the case went through the full labor review board process. This was just one incidence of the IWW's attempt to organize Starbucks workers. The IWW began its outreach efforts at Starbucks in 2004. One of the most pressing issues facing the baristas was scheduling. Like many in the service industry, they are subject to so-called flexible scheduling. Computer software programs create scheduling aimed at reducing labor costs. The result of these programs is often inconsistent and unpredictable hours. This scheduling makes it difficult for workers to establish a budget or plan for childcare. In 2014, the New York Times published a story on this kind of scheduling, featuring the difficulties faced by one Starbucks worker. In a study published also in 2014, they showed that Starbucks stores had 14% less employees on average in 2011 through 13 than they did in 2005 through 2007. Starbucks is not alone in using computer scheduling. Efforts to cut labor costs continue to have devastating impact on the day-to-day lives of workers in the service economy. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So I don't know if you saw the story at the Washington Post last week. There are 11 women who are responsible for 60% of all of the book ban requests in this country. Let me say that again. Evidently, there are 11 women, 11, just 11, responsible for over 60% of all of the book ban requests. Think about that. My first thought was someone needs a job. And then I'm like, oh, wait, that is their job. Because, you know, my mind started going to this place where someone's footing the bill for all this. And there is a well-coordinated effort to attack libraries and just attack public education as a whole. And it's all the same people. It's all the regulars, the usual suspects. And I bring this up not because I want to reiterate the fact that the big money wants to control what our kids see and read, and that the big money wants to ensure that, their agenda is what is put in front of us. It's the pushback that I want to talk about. Because I remember as a kid, I went to a school where, for all the people who say, we should have prayer in school. I went to a school where prayer in school was the thing. You got up every day, you said the Pledge of Allegiance, you said a prayer every morning. And do you know what it became? The pledge didn't have any real meaning. People said it because, okay, we have to. It wasn't a sense of, patriotism. It was, one more thing to start our day. And the prayer meant nothing because, again, it's, we got to do this again. So I've always been, I don't care about prayer in school. Just which prayer are you going to say? That's always been my argument. It's when you make something a protest that you get people who are then, we have to do this. And it's a defiance thing. When you tell people they can't, when you tell them they have to, begrudgingly they'll go through it. But once you tell them they can't, that becomes something all entirely different. For instance, a lot of these books that are being banned, nobody even knew were on the shelves. Literally no one. The second you paid attention to it, now everybody, it's like when I was younger, not the kid younger, but younger in my 20s, a band called Two Live Crew had an album out for a couple of years. Nobody knew anything about it. It was basically nothing. Then you got a senator's wife who said, well, we should put warning labels on albums. And now, double platinum gold, the best-selling album of the year. And it was garbage. But someone said, hey, you can't have this because it says bad stuff. Now everyone had to go get it. So what do you think is happening, Moms for Liberty? What do you think your little darlings are doing right now while you're saying, no, you can't read these books? That's right. Evidently, across the country, there are students forming banned book clubs. These kids are forming anti-censorship groups. These kids are going, hey, you don't want us to see it? We're kids, man. Defiance is our birthright. And I got to tell you, there's part of me that goes, good. Serves them right, I guess, on a certain level. But more importantly, it shows me that my faith in humanity. You can say 1,000 times, we want you to do this. We want you to read more books. We want you to do that. And never going to happen. The second you say, no, you can't. Well, bang. Now it's almost a must. Now, do I want kids in elementary school reading pornography as I've been asked? The answer is no. No parent wants that. No sane, rational parent wants that. But not everything is pornography. Not everything is offensive to everyone. And in fact, the idea of a well-rounded education is that you're exposed to a lot of things. And look, I'm a little more conservative in what I want my children to see, maybe more than the next person. And that's a choice for parents, educators, students, not 11 women who have nothing better to do. That seems to be the point for me. So the fact that you got these 11 women, quite amazing to me. But there you go. Let's quick. We can get a call in real quick. All right, let's do that. Let's quick take a phone call and see who we got here on line one. Hey, what's on your mind? Go ahead.
Rick, good evening. It's Brian from Illinois.
Hey, Brian.
And I just wanted to remind you of the old, now I'm drawing a blank and I'm so sorry. The old show with Ed O'Neill and Katie Sagal.
Oh yeah, Married with Children.
That was nothing until some woman in Michigan got a hold of it. They were going to pull it off the air.
Yeah, I forgot all about
and
that.
And she made such a big deal that everybody said, "Oh, what's this?" And the rest is history.
Yeah.
So I'll leave you be, but have a good night. But I just wanted to remind everybody.
No, that's perfect. That's a perfect way to end it. Thank you so much. No, because that's exactly the point. The second you pointed out and said, "No, you kids can't see this," it's the moment that they had to see. They have to see it. Because I remember being a kid. I know it was a long time ago. I know when my mother said, "Don't touch that," had to touch it. I know that when she said, "Don't do that," had to do it. So there's gonna be a blowback to these book banning, education burning Moms for Liberty groups, and it's gonna be their kids doing it, and that's the solace that I take as they're attempting to destroy public education. But it's incumbent on us, you and me, and the rest of us, who believe that education should be there for everyone. It should be open to the public, and it should be universal across the board, not just for ones who are fortunate enough to be able to afford private education or connected enough to get into special, kind of charter scenarios, but a good quality, efficient education for every student, regardless of your zip code, regardless of where your station on the socioeconomic ladder finds you. And yes, being able to read books. That's where we're going to end the night. I appreciate you taking time for us. You miss any portion of the program, download the podcast. Something I said got under your skin, on your nerves, or made you think, I want to hear about it. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com, especially angry emails.
You're listening to 93.5 The Tap.
WCFW HD2 Chippewa Falls, W228EP Eau Claire.
And streaming everywhere on the Civic Media app.